This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 13th of October, 2021. Big day for markets with the FOMC minutes up and the focus for everyone, inflation up, not just out of the US today, but for China overnight with the PPI. First things first, let's get to the market yesterday where we saw a choppy session, not a real high volatility session, but very interesting after hours to get this news item. And before I get to that, let's look again briefly at the technicals, the really key areas we're sandwiched between here. That little high there for the cycle that was above a key Fibonacci level, but that's right where we closed on that rally higher in the S&P 500, as you can see on slide two. Note the actual high is that key 55-day moving average, which was such a key support on the way up. Now resistance. And then on the support side, we have now the 61.8% retracement of this rally, which was almost near the exact low yesterday. So this 43.20 area, we can call it, if we're going to see, I think, a test of those cycle lows into 42.60. And below that, probably the 200-day moving average will be the next focus there. I think really one key news item out overnight, Peter, something that just has to spook the market on a broader basis, I would think, Apple. I mean, you got the most profitable company in the world. Can't build its number one product, the iPhone, to the degree it would like to, at least with these shortages announced in chips going into those phones in the coming quarter, which is a key quarter for Apple, the Christmas shopping, et cetera. So take us through that story and what else you're seeing on your radar.
Yeah, so on slide three, you see Apple's share price right there. I mean, it's over a $2 trillion company, I think $2.4 trillion market value company at one point, arguably the most profitable company in the world. Obviously, the number one priority for all manufacturers of semiconductors in the world to supply to Apple, because they are the most important customer in the world of semiconductors, I think. So the fact that they have to slash their iPhone production by 10 million, which is equivalent to around 4-5% of annual production, I think is a testimony to the constraints that we are seeing. And it's one of their suppliers that are really struggling to keep up is Qualcomm. So it just tells you, and we have the Susquehanna Semiconductor Delivery Index. I think it pushed above 20 weeks, or getting close to 22 weeks, up from normal, I think 11 or 12 weeks delivery time. So it's getting increasingly worrisome. And I think the huge demand we're seeing for consumer electronics, but also electric vehicles, which have 4 to 5 times as many semiconductors as a normal internal combustion engine car, is also putting enormous strain on the industry. So this is definitely something to watch. Apple shares were only down 1% in extended trading, but let's see how it fares when the US market opens. But we have to circle back, John, to the general market, because your chart on the S&P 500 futures already pretty outdated, because it looks like we're rebounding here in early session, and we were. But we already now seeing the NASDAQ 100 futures getting very close to being down from the opening print. It's really struggling to bounce back. Sentiment is weak in equities. We had the import numbers coming out from China overnight that was worse than expected, showing that, you know, growth is still slowing down and slowing down faster than expected. We have the China PPI tomorrow. That's going to be super interesting. But I want to highlight as well on slide two, the green transformation basket was the interesting outlier on the upside yesterday. Some of that was due to the EU issuing 12 billion worth of euros of its first green bond. Demand was 11 times higher than that. And I think that really bolstered the entire industry. And then at the same time, you have had the IEA warning that we need to triple the amount of investments in renewable energy to offset the climate impact. So you're getting a lot of boost here from key institutions in the green renewable space. So that's really worth having in mind here if you're trading this.
Yeah, I have some follow-up comments on that green bond. Actually, on the FX side of things, very interesting development, that one, and I'll follow up on that. But, you know, with the one of the key pressures lately being the energy market, so we need to get over to you, Olu. What's going on? What's the latest in natural gas prices in Europe, and what we're seeing in oil, where it looks like we've kind of stalled out, at least in terms of momentum on this most recent move?
We have indeed, John. So let's start off on slide six here, just putting in the Brent crude chart. As you say, we We found some support around that 82.5 level after struggling to make it above 85 early in the week, and just drifting a little bit lower today. I think we have to keep in mind that the recent surge above $80 in Brent really was driven by that surge we've seen in coal and gas prices. Coal remains on fire. We saw another big jump in China overnight, also trading higher today in Europe. So that support is still coming from that front, and also from gas price in Europe, which are up 4% as we speak, 91 euros a megawatt. And I put in and that's important because we talk about this potential gas to oil switch at these very high gas prices. And Goldman Sachs, in their latest update on gas, they basically indicated that at current oil prices, that switch level is around $27 a therm. I put that in on the chart here. That's the yellow line. So as long as we stay above that level for Asian and European gas prices, then that switch is well and truly alive, and that will continue to increase at demand to the oil market, and thereby keeping it supported. So yeah, it's treading water here, but we just really need to keep an eye on coal and gas, because that's where we get the feeling of how tight this market is and how worried the market is into the winter months.
All right. And now looping back a little bit to what I mentioned earlier on FX, I just want to mention one thing. We had a data point out this morning from the UK and the latest trade balance data, this one for August. And there was a big revision downwards for the July number as well. If you want some perspective on where we've been and coming from on the trade balance and where we're going to, you can see on slide 4 of the monthly data there, where you saw a huge deficit coming into the end of 2020. That was linked to sort of panic buying, or at least, obviously, customs free buying before the end of the EU relationship, etc. That rebounded, but now we're going back to these very concerning levels. If you want to look at where the UK is current account deficit wise, what is the UK selling to the world? Well, apparently not enough, and so that means it has to absorb enormous capital flows to offset this. I'm really fascinated by this, by the situation as well, with supply chain limitations, almost the worst as bad as they are anywhere in the UK. And then this energy crunch also is particularly bad for the UK. There was a news item out circulating this morning that they're going to see if they can make home chargers for EVs turn off during peak hours. These are the kind of measures they're resorting to. And yet, if you look at sterling versus the dollar cable, that chart there on the right, we're really just stuck in this range. We've seen Bank of England expectations going vertical. That should be supporting sterling, but these other factors, I think, are holding it back. A tremendous amount of tension, I think, in that chart. I'm really curious how it resolves. I'm somewhat negative, but probably that would require that we go head south on risk sentiment. But I think sterling also very susceptible to the direction and sentiment. So be watching that very closely in coming sessions. And then just rounding out the FX space, I mentioned as well, Peter already brought it up, a really key event, this first EU green bond. So as you mentioned, a $12 billion massively oversubscribed bond. And just keep in mind, this is a 15-year bond. It yielded 0.45%. That's superior to what you're getting at the for the bunds, for example, where the 10-year bund is at still slightly negative yield of 0.89 basis points right now. The high for the cycle, by the way, we're getting close, around minus 7 basis points. And given all of this political and central bank and ECB support for the green agenda and the fact that these are coming from the EU themselves, it's quite interesting to see whether that sort of yield spread closes at the margin. And you're seeing, for example, that could be some of the reason behind bunds performing so poorly. If that spread continues to close, it would also bring safe haven euro yields decently higher than where they are in Japan. And that might be why you're seeing some of the euro yen action. You're seeing almost a vertical leap over the last few trading sessions. I got a chart on slide 5 for that. And we can see the general trends, although I'm getting a bit concerned. We're at some pretty nosebleed levels on trend strength to the downside for the Japanese yen. Minus 6.8 is very rare. You can see the trend readings there on the FX board on slide 5. But just to add on to this, 30% of that E recovery fund of 800 billion euros, or is it 750 billion euros, $800 billion. I always hate when Bloomberg quotes dollar amounts. I don't care. I just want the euro amount. Anyway, 30% of that recovery fund is going to go to green-linked spending. And of course, with all these ESG mandates and people wanting to guide as much of their investment, maybe even some pension portfolios into ESG, that could mean, of course, a lot of a lot of these recycled savings get kept in Europe and into these types of green bonds. So I think nominally at the margin, this is a euro positive development. But we also saw on the other direction in yields. So we saw bund yields is quite high. U.S. Treasury yields getting capped yesterday by a very strong 10-year auction. Very good signs. The Japanese savers are looking at these as very attractive levels to get involved in bidding up U.S. Treasuries. We saw a very strong, again, auction with participation from foreigners, and most people think of Japan when they see that number. So a key auction there, and we have a 30-year auction later today, which could, again, be very interesting because the yield move has been quite a driver, especially in FX, but also elsewhere across markets, with FX being right now about bidding up commodity currencies and then selling the very lowest yielders, at least to the Japanese yen. Okay, I'll let you guys fight over what you want to cover next. Maybe we ought to round out the commodity space, where copper, you know, Dr. Copper, the direction of the economy, et cetera, it's not going down, but it's not going up yet either. What's it going to take to get this metal higher if we're supposed to be building out this green agenda and alternative energy in the coming months and years?
Well, you just said it, John, and I think adding to that, I think we've seen recently just a renewed focus on the inflation worries. Remember that copper earlier this year was one of the inflation go-to darlings when we had all that reflation focus back in the first quarter this year. That's when copper rallied to the highs we saw back in, or the record high we had in May. And you can argue that this past month has the news flow from China has been anything but supportive. We got the whole property crisis, a key source of demand for copper in China. And despite of this, copper's actually been holding up pretty well. And right now we are challenging that downtrend from those May highs. And it just indicates that this is just not just a question about Chinese demand, because there is a demand story building outside China as well. The transformation run, the inflation focus, and stock levels are actually, even though we are worried about China, stock levels, as you can see on the top right on here on slide 7, is actually fairly weak, has been coming down recently. So stock levels are not elevated at all at this point. And we also have to remember, if we do get some fresh momentum to the upside, then this market is really underowned. The hedge funds guys have been reducing their exposure in recent months. And as you can see in the top, on the bottom right there, it is pretty not neutral, but only a small long. So there's plenty of space to react if we start to get some fresh momentum. So keep an eye out for that September high. If you take that out, then I think we have a confirmation of a move towards the recent highs. And just finishing out the commodity space, Mark, we don't really talk about that much recently because not too much has been going on. That's a grain space. We are seeing soybeans and corn continue to drift lower, so basically going against this general bullish commodity trend. And the drivers behind it is really that we had a bit of a turnaround in the outlook for crop production, both in the US and South America during the past few months. And that basically means we're seeing the biggest crop ever in soybeans, both in North and South America. And we're seeing the second biggest crop on record in corn. And that's basically leading to this, around 30% correction we now had from the highs. Wheat is somewhat going against that trend, still supported. And as you can see, not too far from the recent highs.
All right. Well, that's good news on the inflation front. That's the very most wrong kind of inflation, I would argue. Food prices going higher, particularly for EM. All right. Let's get to this earnings season, which is getting underway in a bigger way today with some of these big financials reporting out of the U.S. Peter, take us through what your focus is here.
Yeah. So yesterday we had the Fastenal earnings release, this construction equipment supplier in the U.S. and well, it was mostly in line. There was no big hiccups on the margin side. Before we talk about it, so we have Delta Airlines and JP Morgan Chase reporting today. Obviously, that's the key focus. I've put in JP Morgan Chase. It's one of the largest financial institutions in the world. You know, very large global footprint in asset management, wealth management, consumer banking, commercial banking, credit cards. You name it. It has it all. And as you can see on the share price, has done extremely well since the lows from the pandemic. It's a pretty good beacon for what's going on in all these various industries, in the financial industry. So we'll be watching that, especially where the loan demand is coming up, because that has been one of the issues in the U.S. banking industry, is that the fallout from the pandemic caused the U.S. government to and other governments around the world to drastically, increase their fiscal stimulus, and that created a large surplus in the private sector, and all this money obviously was spent. Some of it was spent on goods, global goods consumption have risen quite dramatically as we couldn't spend it on services. The rest of the money went into deposits in U.S. banks, pushing up the deposit to loan ratio, which was a little bit of a conundrum for these U.S. banks because you don't want to have these large surplus on deposits in the current interest rate environment. So the key focus here is whether there are signs now finally that companies are increasing their loan demands and also consumers, because that's really needed to power U.S. financials and financials in general to a higher level. Delta Airlines, of course, is interesting because of its it sits inside the the travel industry. You mentioned yesterday, John, the Southwest Airlines have had a lot of cancellations due to bad weather. There have been other issues as well, but it's the U.S. airline industry is definitely one of the airlines industries in the world that have recovered the most, I would say, from the lows. I think air passenger traffic is almost back to where they were before the pandemic. And so that's definitely something we're going to watch. And then we also have BlackRock today, but that's, they never surprise to the downside. And but I will highlight as well SAP, one of the largest technology companies here in Europe. They are raising this morning their full year outlook as a shift from to the cloud part of their business. And that just bolsters my take, which I wrote in the earnings preview last Friday, which you can find on home.saxo/insights, and you can just go to my name and you find it there, is that the fact that the higher marginal cost of energy is really pressuring companies in the fiscal world. Also, we have the wage pressures, we have general input costs from commodities. But then on the flip side of that, you have all the online-based companies, especially the digital ones, the software companies, they don't experience the same type of pressures from these constraints in the fiscal world. So we'll see a relative strong earnings season for these companies versus the ones that are operating in the fiscal world. And I think that's a very nice and interesting lead in into these this OECD tax deal, which arguably is also discussing what to do with these technology companies. Should they have a special tax rate applied to them because they simply operate under very different parameters than fiscal companies?
Right. And also that very interested in that whole loan to deposit ratio, as you discussed, because that I think there's been to some degree that treasury yields have been held down by all of those, a lot of those stimulus checks, like you say, ending up as deposits, and then these banks having too much liquidity and then needing to park this in treasuries to a degree where the Fed is having to lend back out the treasuries that it's buying in this reverse repo account. So very interesting developments there. In the coming, or what they're saying in their guidance. Let's look at the macro calendar today. Very busy calendar. We need to cover a couple of things. First of all, we have the US CPI up later today at standard time, 12:30 GMT. Expected not changed from the prior month of August in terms of the year-on-year figures, 4.0 on the core and 5.3% on the headline. I like to look at the month-on-month these days because these are more interesting, and it's dropped quite a bit in July. If I recollect, 0.3 on the headline, 0.1 on the core, and these are expected to be sort of still orderly at around 0.3, 0.2. So I think if we get the beat there, that's where to look for surprising the market here. And then later, I'll get to the FOMC minutes in a moment, but we have the Chinese CPI, PPI. Peter, I saw you scribbling in this morning's quick take we sent out that it would be the highest level in the that record since, I don't know, the mid-90s or something for China.
Yeah, 1995.
It comes in as expected, yeah?
Yeah, 1995 at 10.5%. We should note that there has been a tendency lately for the Chinese or the China PPI time series to actually exceed expectations. So economists having very difficult these incorporating all the underlying dynamics in the Chinese economy. I don't think the rising coal prices and power shortage have made things even better for the Chinese PPI, which is together with the energy two main sources of global inflation pressure. I think this is a super key macro release, and if we exceed the expectation, let's say we get 11% or even higher, I think it's a huge negative for risky assets like equities.
And China runs on coal, and the coal price has been going mad lately. That's a very key component of that PPI as it feeds through the rest of the system. So yeah, definitely have to watch that very closely. Then we have the FOMC minutes, and that is a preview, or as a, you know, coming into this FOMC minutes tonight, we had one of the Fed voters, Atlanta Fed President Bostic, out saying that transitory, quote unquote, is a dirty word. So I think, yes, you clearly have some votes on the Fed that are very interested in getting this taper over and done with. He did still say that he sees the first rate hike as being, quote, more than a year off. So, you know, the sense of urgency is not quite there to the degree we're seeing in the Bank of England, where we're seeing it priced for even as early as November, about 30% odds of a BOE hike at the November meeting, getting towards 100% for the December meeting. And then FOMC minutes, of course, watching for the debate on the policy, a sense of discomfort on inflation. We also have that T-bond auction before that. And Ola, we have a couple of major reports, I guess the market looking for where the you know, these monthly reports on the energy situation. How important are these for the outlook?
Well, they're most certainly very important. We got both monthly reports out from OPEC and EIA. IEA will be out with their monthly report tomorrow, Thursday. That's probably the most important one. But also today we got EIA's World Energy Outlook, and they were just out. The head was out saying yesterday, they just talk about the phenomenal amount of investment that's required to maintain stable oil production, and it is one of these conundrums that we are currently dealing with. That the investors they want to lend money to other projects than the so-called old economy mining and oil operations. So we'll get some guidance and clearly also just to get a feel for how this gas and coal surge, how that's going to how it impacts their view on oil demand into the winter.
Yeah, and have a look at our podcast feed a couple of episodes back. We had that special edition podcast speaking to that very issue about the underinvestment in the space and how much more is needed to get production up where demand needs to be where the supply needs to be for the current demand, especially for the build out of alternative energy, etc. A great interview with Tor Svelen of Svelen Capital. All right, we're going to call it a day for today. We're still in lockdown, helmets on mode here until a different tact is proven prudent or otherwise. So keep that in mind. Stay careful, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.